it's always more fun to share with everyone. It's always more fun to share with everyone. If you have to give one to your friend.
That's right. Freak Radio 101 FM, freakradio.org. That's Jack Johnson there with a sharing song. And we like to share here at Free Radio, 101 FM, freakradio.org. It's always more fun to share with everyone. Is that right, John?
Yes, Bob. That's incredibly right.
We got John Anderson.
You are correct, sir.
We have John Anderson on the line here. A media pioneer, I would say. And professor, right? Can I call you professor yet?
No. Just a grad student.
Grad student.
I don't get to wear that title for a while still. So.
And you also host a website called DIYmedia.net where you've been covering a lot of media issues.
Oh, yeah.
And I've been in the news and emailing back and forth with you and other folks and reading a bunch of stories about a bunch of stuff that's happening to the internet. Not to mention trying to keep the net neutral. There's stuff called the Pro-IP Act right now that's happening that's, I believe, going through the House. It is H.R. 4279? And it's starting to gain. It already passed the House, correct?
It passed the House overwhelmingly by something like a vote of 410-10. And it is currently bottled up in the Senate, which is pretty good news. It's sitting in committee, and the Senate, as you know, is nominally run by Democrats, and the Democrats, fortunately, in most cases, don't hold the same types of views on copyright and intellectual property as Republicans do, except for the ones, unfortunately, no offense, that live in California and are beholden to the entertainment industry. But the Pro-IP Act is through the House, waiting for committee approval in the Senate, and actually it probably doesn't look like it's going to get out of the Senate this year, which is good, because the bill itself really, really sucks. And actually, the bill sucks so bad that the Bush administration itself has actually at least tentatively said that they don't really like the bill either. This is a piece of legislation that's so far into the hands of the copyright industry that even those who are typically willing to support, the increase in the power of protecting intellectual property are still drawing the line in this one and saying, whoa, maybe we shouldn't go this far.
Well, first of all, briefly describe what is H.R. 4279, the Pro-IP bill.
Sure. It's called the Pro-IP Act, and of course, like a lot of great pieces of legislation in Congress, Pro-IP stands for Protecting Our Intellectual Property. It's a clever little acronym that makes it sound like it's, a wonderful thing. Who doesn't want to protect our intellectual property, right? Artists need to make money, and if they don't, they won't have the right, the ability to be creative, so we have to do whatever we can. And as we've seen over the course of the past 15 years, the copyright industry, the entertainment and culture industries, have taken the idea of copyright and turned it into something that was initially designed to, try to make creativity happen, and turned it into something that actually stifles creativity by turning creative products into commodities and basically defining the law around the commodity aspect of these properties. So that's why, the RIAA and MPAA are suing people for file sharing now, because they've gotten laws on the books that say, this is bad and we have recourse in the courts to actually punish people, and they're taking it upon themselves to enforce copyright law and try to stem the tide of things like file sharing and the sharing of creative information. Well, the Pro-IP Act would actually get the government more actively involved in enforcing copyright. The first thing it would do is it would actually create a position within the Department of Justice that people within Congress have been calling the copyright czar, kind of like we have a war on drugs czar and we have a war on terrorism czar. We have a
very similar
a war on copyright czar, which would effectively make the Department of Justice basically in the business of being the RIAA and MPAA's bitch, you know, making the federal government the long arm of the law to enforce copyright. And on top of that, and this is probably the most controversial part of the Pro-IP Act, it would essentially allow the government to apply the same types of drug seizure and forfeiture rules that they do to drug cases. Like, say you get caught with a couple ounces of weed in your house, a cop could make a good judgment that you have this weed because you've sold other drugs, or you have so much weed because you're using your house to sell drugs, therefore we can confiscate your house, or we can confiscate your car because we believe that you've used your car to conduct drug business, and therefore under federal statutes, we can seize your property, we can make you forfeit your property in order to punish you for being involved in drug use and the drug trade. And that's been a boon for police departments all over the country, where drug forfeitures and seizures have been made, and suddenly police departments have two, three times the money they did. They triple their budget in one case. Well, the same types of principles would be applied for copyright infringement. So let's say, like someone like you or I, who make a lot of their own media, right? And we have large archives of media that we've made either by appropriating other people's material under fair use or by, you know, sharing music with people that may or may not be copyrighted. Let's say that we draw the attention of the Department of Justice and they put us under investigation and they find out that they have probable cause that we're actually engaged in active, widespread copyright infringement. They could come to your house or to my house. They could seize my computer. They could examine it for information, and if they determine that I have unauthorized copyrighted material on my hard drive that I shouldn't have, they can seize my computer. They can take it, and I'll never see it again.
Right.
If they can make a case that somehow I've gained something monetarily from sharing information with people on the internet, they can take other things. They could take my hard drives and my speakers and my monitor and my printer and, you know, my cable modem and, you know, possibly other things. It's basically applying some very nebulous and very dangerous war on drugs tactics to this so-called war on copyright. And it's a draconian measure that we've never seen anything of the likes of it before in the intellectual property battle. And like I said, it seems like there may actually be one shred of common sense left in Congress, specifically in the Senate, where this bill might not actually become law. But it's overwhelmingly passed the House, and it's pretty much up to the Senate to decide now whether they want to inflict this on us or not.
I was surprised to hear it was brought up by John Conyers. Is that true?
I don't know who the sponsor of the bills actually are.
I read that somewhere.
The House Judiciary Committee is chaired by John Conyers. And I think he is one of the sponsors of the bill.
Right.
Which does, you know, bring up some interesting details. I mean, John Conyers, of course, has been a person who's has a lot of integrity in other areas of his political life. For example, looking at things like the administration's wrongdoings and, you know, trying to get people from the administration to testify in front of his committee, possibly subpoenaing people and things like that. So, you know, he's done some good things, but I think he was, like many people in Congress, misled by industry lobbyists in thinking that, you know, software piracy and music, you know, piracy and movie piracy is such a huge issue that we have to take drastic steps in order to fight this scourge on our economy, you know, is kind of the way that it's being portrayed in D.C. And for all the good things John Conyers is, he's not well educated on intellectual property issues.
Well,
and he bought it hook, line, and sinker. And when you have other people, like, for example, Diane Watson, a representative from California, who represents, you know, like the Hollywood area. You know, fellow Democrat comes over and says, yo, we're having this issue, and my constituency, meaning my lobbyists who give me campaign donations, really want us to do something about it, and they've come to me with this idea, what do you think? And he says, put together a bill, and I'll send it through committee, and he does. You know, he's doing a friend for a party colleague.
Yeah.
The fact that he's a part of the sponsor of the bill makes me wonder if he's actually read it, but, you know, I've given up on trying to figure out the logical rationale behind why Congress does what it does.
Well, part of this, they're going to, like you were saying, they're going to they're going to have to teach law enforcement how to deal with it. That includes border guards and probably airport security will have the option, I guess, and checking your laptop or checking your MP3 player or seeing what CDs you have with you. And if any of those are pirated, you could be found in violation of this. Is that correct?
Yes. There was actually an earlier version of the Pro-IP Act that was first debated in committee that would have actually not only allowed government agencies to effectively search your digital media devices to see if you had any copyrighted material on them, and possibly seize those devices if they're found to be used in violation of federal law. But it also would have allowed the people who were the victims of infringement to sue you for each track that they could prove was ripped illegally.
$30,000 per track, I believe.
Yeah,
right?
let's say a friend of yours gave you some CD of somebody, right? And you ripped a copy of it, and there's 12 tracks on a CD. And you get busted by the federal copyright cops, and they come, and they look, and they find these 12 CDs, and there's 12 tracks, and they figure out that you don't own the CD, so they make the, you know, they jump to the logical conclusion that obviously you're infringing copyright, and record label X, who put out the CD that you did, found out about this.
Right.
They could have technically sued you. What is that? 30 times 12. You know, that's like over $300,000, $360,000.
Right.
For having one album's worth of ripped MP3s on your iPod. That part of the bill has actually been stripped. That provision is no longer in the Pro-IP Act. But the fact that the government can actually still come in and basically use drug forfeiture and seizure laws to take your stuff is really disturbing because, as we've seen in the war on drugs, that's been abused. There are governments, like local governments, whose police departments and other law enforcement agencies are basically addicted to drug money. If they don't make enough busts and they don't get enough seized property and cash, they have to start laying off cops. You know, they have to start closing down their SWAT teams. They have to not drive the hyped out Dodge Chargers, police cruisers anymore. You know, and it's become a very lucrative way of conducting law enforcement, and this would be just an addition to that menu of things that cops could essentially rob you blind for to support more cops. There's a lot of attempts right now being made by the U.S. government specifically to impose its own laws on other countries. You know, if they can make a case that somehow possibly someone has done something that has even something remotely to do with a crime that may have happened in the United States, our federal government is not afraid to exercise, its muscle in the ring of international diplomacy in other ways to actually force other countries to actively enforce U.S. laws on their own soil. Another good example of that that happened, what was it, about a year or two ago, was with a place in Sweden called the Pirate Bay.
Right.
Which doesn't actually do any file sharing on its own. It simply tracks bit tracker torrents. So if you want to find out what active bit tracker torrents are going on, or bit torrent trackers, sorry, are around. So like you want to find a torrent for something, you can go to the Pirate Bay and find out where that link is. But they don't actually host the material. They just provide an aggregator or a feed for people that want to find this material. And the federal government, the U.S. federal government, went to the Swedish federal government, actually through our State Department, went to their foreign ministry and said, hey, a lot of the stuff that the Pirate Bay is pointing people to is U.S. copyrighted material. And the Swedish law said, well, there's really no problem with that because they're not actually hosting the material, right? So they're not actively sharing copies. And the Americans came back and said, well, no, but under our law, basically enabling people to find copyrighted material on the internet is almost as good as actually being a pirate, a copyright pirate in and of itself. Therefore, you need to shut down this server. And initially, the Swedish government said no, until they received a lot of pressure from the RIAA, the MPAA, through our Department of State and Department of Justice. There's actually high-level talks involving the White House. And with the help of U.S. authorities, Sweden raided the Pirate Bay, confiscated all of its servers, and was going to prosecute the people behind the Pirate Bay for basically infringing on U.S. copyright law. And the Swedish government effectively turned around after there was so much popular discontent among the Swedish public that they dropped the case, and the Pirate Bay is still back online, and the Swedish government hasn't made any moves against them ever since. And that's an informal way by which, you know, U.S. law is being exported around the world. And then there are the formal ways, and you know, there's lots of that happening around here as well, especially through things like trade agreements where you have the potential for U.S. copyright law to essentially be exported and copied verbatim onto the books of other countries.
That would be ACTA, the Anti-Counterfeiting Trade Agreement.
Yes.
Anybody out there hear about that? Anybody that's not on CNN, haven't heard it lately on the mainstream news?
No, I mean, you know how it is, Bob. You you talk about trade and suddenly people's eyes glaze over,
that's
right?
True.
Trade must obviously be good for business. So, you know, the mainstream media, if they touch it, they'll just say, well, it's a trade agreement. You know, it's something that we're trying to do to increase and expand our economic reach, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Just like pro-IP. It sounds like pro-my-IP.
Right,
yeah, that
right,
sounds
right.
Cool.
It's like, oh, this is a good thing. It's the anti-counterfeiting trade agreement. Wow, who can be against that? What it is essentially a multilateral trade agreement that would effectively impose U.S. copyright law on the countries that sign this agreement. And the governments that are looking at this include all that are represented by the European Commission, which is basically most of Western Europe, Japan, Australia, Switzerland, New Zealand, Canada, Mexico, and there's one other one. I want to say it's somewhere in Asia, like Taiwan or South Korea or something. So it's not like a World Trade Organization thing. They can't go through the WTO to do this because the WTO is deadlocked on so many other issues. So what the U.S. government now is doing is negotiating this trade agreement at the individual government level and trying to build up enough powerful governments so that the coalition that supports this agreement essentially will dictate to the rest of the world that you need to follow this in order to do business with us. And what this anti-counterfeiting trade agreement would do is essentially impose U.S. copyright law on the rest of the signatories to this agreement. And it would also allow two very important things to happen. First one would be if you were going into one of the countries that was a signatory of this agreement, like the United States, at the border, customs agents and other law enforcement officials could effectively search your laptop and your cell phone and any electronic device you have and scan it for copyright infringing material. So again, let's say you take your iPod to Switzerland and this law has been passed, and at the border you're stopped and the customs official sees your iPod and checks it out, and you can't confirm to them that you actually own everything on there. They could effectively, you know, confiscate your iPod. They could seize your material because that would be considered, you know, you're importing contraband material into their country. It'd be like bringing drugs into the country. We're not going to allow this to happen. The other thing that this anti-counterfeiting trade agreement would do was it would effectively coerce internet service providers into working with any of the signatory governments on any of their cases involving copyright infringement. So let's say that some, you know, whack-ass case out of Japan comes along that involves somebody in Germany, right? The German internet service provider would be forced by this law to participate in the Japanese investigation. The ACTA agreement, I think, is definitely derived from the problems that the United States had shutting down the Pirate Bay. Since they couldn't get Sweden to effectively impose U.S. law on Swedish people, now the U.S. government is negotiating with other governments to basically do it formally. We tried to do it through informal channels. We couldn't act. We know it didn't work. There was too much popular support. So now let's do it at the governmental level. Put these laws in effect. Do it under the guise of trade policy. So no one's paying attention and everyone's eyes will just glaze over and they'll be too bored to care. And then by the time we wake up, this will be a ratified document and it will be law, and effectively the U.S.'s version of what copyright should be will have been exported to potentially dozens of countries. The people in those countries will have had no say, and the power of the United States as the global hegemon will have been increased once again. And this is something that will actually be taken up, I want to believe it's next month, at the G8 summit. This is not being, like I said, this is not being actually actively debated and organized within the international trade arena. You know, it's not happening through the WTO or anything like that. They're actually trying to do it at the executive level. So when the G8 leaders meet, all the presidents and prime ministers get together, this is going to be on their agenda. And if they say, you know, this is something that we want to do, there isn't really a lot that could potentially stop them from doing it. I think that because it's an international agreement, it would still have to be at least nominally ratified by the U.S. Senate. But, you know, there's been a lot of power given to the president ever since the Bill Clinton era, where the president basically has the authority to unilaterally negotiate and approve trade agreements, something called fast-track authority.
Right.
And I don't know if the current sitting president still has that authority. But if he does, then there really isn't anything to stop George Bush from basically imposing ACTA as law. And if you tie that in with the pro-IP bill, you're looking at a really, really, really bad situation for information freedom in the United States specifically, but also around the quote-unquote developed world. That's a bad thing.
So if all these are in place, what would this do to people, to the way life is right now on the net?
Well, I think it's probably the second most... No, let me reclassify that. I think it's probably the third most dangerous thing to be happening to, like, the internet, beyond network neutrality and surveillance in general. The fact that we don't have a neutral network already opens up internet service providers from being able to block or to discriminate on which type of content you can share. So there's already been difficulties with, like, Comcast, for example, blocking file sharing programs, effectively blocking their use. That's one bad thing that's already diminished. Like, for example, I'm a Comcast subscriber now, and I know that I am not on a neutral network, so I just don't use BitTorrent anymore because there's a chance it's not going to work. That's already interfered with my ability to share. The second thing that's bad is surveillance, the fact that there's, you know, government surveillance actually taking place on a widespread level indiscriminately of all traffic that goes across the internet. AT&T, as we know, has been actively involved in working with the federal government to investigate quote-unquote terrorism. And if you communicate on the internet, there is pretty much a 100% chance that the packets of data that you communicate, whether that be streaming media, whether that be a website, whether that be email, at some point from point A to point B, as you send information from point A to point B, that information transits through a piece of the internet AT&T owns. So even if you're not an AT&T subscriber, you're still being snooped on. And that's dangerous because who knows what kinds of information people are collecting and what that may be used for in the future. As we all know, information can be taken out of context and suddenly a good person can be made to look bad. And I think that selective surveillance will add into that. And then to complete the trifecta of threats online, if we then increase the penalties for being engaged in behaviors like file sharing, which may, but not always, result in, you know, something like copyright infringement taking place, then we're essentially killing off the ability for us to share lots of different types of information, whether it be copyrighted or not. Because as we've seen, like in the case of the drug war, cops don't go around just busting the biggest dealers. They go after the low-hanging fruit, the easiest people that they can find and bust and get a return on through seizures or forfeitures or things like that. And so what this does is, what these laws potentially would do is bring a whole new series of cops, basically, onto the internet to police it and crack down on our ability to share information. And it's not like these cops are, you know, technologically savvy and understand how file sharing works. You know, they're just out there to do their job, goddammit. And if that job means stopping you from file sharing, then they'll do whatever they can to do it. So I would call it, you know, probably the third biggest threat to the freedom of creativity and information sharing on the internet right now is this Pro-IP Act and this anti-counterfeiting trade agreement. So it's a big deal, but it's
right.
It's not the most dangerous thing taking place, but it's definitely within the top three.
Preventing us all from sharing.
Yes.
You know, weren't we learned that earlier when we were kids to share with one another.
Good.
That sharing is good, but now they're telling us it's bad.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm talking with John Anderson here, host of DIYmedia.net, also a media expert. Is that what you call
him? I'm just a guy who knows stuff. I don't like words like expert or pioneer. I'm no more important than anybody else. We're all in this together.
Yeah, this is true. And we're talking about a bunch of stuff coming down the pike that probably you don't all know about because it ain't out in the news. I had to dig for it and search for it, and John knows a lot about it.
It was you, Bob, that twigged me into the anti-counterfeiting trade agreement. I didn't even know that was going down.
Really?
No. I knew about the Pro-IP bill and things like that. I'm definitely much more of a Congress watcher than I am a international trade watcher. And so you emailed me, what was it, like a couple weeks ago, saying,
right,
have you heard anything about this?
Yeah.
And I looked around and did some of my own research and went, holy shit, this is really bad.
WikiLeaks, what's it, WikiLeaks? WikiLeaks.org is the one that leaked it originally. What can folks do? Is there anything, writing your congressman, I mean, anything that folks can do, mass emailings?
Probably the best things you can do right now is to definitely contact your senator, your senators. You have two in each state. So if you are in the United States, even if you don't vote, you still have two senators and they're representing you. It is never a bad idea to contact those people. The best way to do that is via an actual bona fide letter. Send them a letter in the mail and send them a letter that you wrote. Don't send them a boilerplate message. A lot of these email, petition online things get tossed out now. People have gotten wise to the internet and they know that basically that's a version of activist spam. So, you know, petitions online are not going to help you here. The reason why I say the Senate is because with regards to both of these pieces of legislation, both the Pro-IP Act and the Anti-Counterfeiting Trade Agreement, the Senate would be the forum where nominally the public would at least have a chance to be heard or at least their opinions be represented. The Pro-IP Act, again, has passed the House and is currently in committee in the Senate, so it would probably be good to contact, I don't know which committee it's in. I think it's probably either in the Senate Commerce Committee or the Justice Committee, the Judiciary, Senate Committee on the Judiciary. Find out who those people are. You can go to senate.gov, and you can look up the committees and look up the people who are on the Judiciary Committee and the Commerce Committee, and write those people letters and say, these are bad laws or bad potential laws, and this is why. If you are lucky enough to have a senator from your state that is on one of those committees, then your voice is amplified even more, because not only are you an interested American, you are also a voting constituent. And you can say, this is bad for me because of this reason, but it's bad for you because you're up for election in this year or in 2010.
Right.
And if you pass a law like this, then there's no way that I can support you. There isn't really any places we can go to. We can't go to, like, the U.S. Trade Representative's office and say, you know, please don't work on this piece of legislation, because these people aren't working on it. The anti-counterfeiting trade agreement is being conducted even above the level of trade negotiations, even though it's being couched as a trade bill. So really, if there's any sort of public feedback that you want to give to regulators, pretty much the only chance you have is maybe your senators. And even then, that may only stop one of these pieces of legislation, specifically the Pro-IP bill.
H.R.
The Anti-Counterfeiting Trade Agreement,
4279.
H.R. 4279. And I don't know what the companion number of that is in the Senate.
Okay.
I don't know if it's what the bill number is in the Senate. But if you go to thomas.loc.gov, that's basically the database of all pending bills in Congress. And if you type in the search box Pro-IP Act, you should at least be able to find the House version. And if you click on that link, it'll tell you information about the Senate version. I don't know if they have the same title or not. But the House has already signed off on this, and the Senate is really the only place where a block can happen. And as far as the anti-counterfeiting trade agreement, again, if the president doesn't have fast-track authority, then the Senate will have to actually ratify this. And if you let them know this is coming down the pike, then hopefully, if you have faith in our system of government still, we can actually possibly stop that in its tracks as well. But, you know, both of these things are happening very quickly. They're happening under the radar. There hasn't been a lot of public mobilization about it. If you want to find out more about either of these bills, the two places that I would recommend doing some more research on, especially for the Pro-IP Act, is the Electronic Frontier Foundation, which is EFF.org. And they've been involved in lots of different things involving online privacy and copyright law and things like that, and defending people's rights to innovate and create and share. And another group is called Public Knowledge, and I think their website's publicknowledge.org. They also deal with intellectual property, and they have actually been not quite as radical as some of your other media reform groups are when it comes to things like supporting intellectual property rights for individuals, but they are still fighting, you know, on balance, the good fight.
Right.
And both of those groups are watching at least the Pro-IP Act go through, and they probably do have some information on ACTA. But again, this is stuff that, you know, policy wonks and Congress watchers and people that are really interested in the subject know about, but it hasn't made it out into the public consciousness yet. And it might not, you know, until it's too late. So do what you can while you can. Probably the best thing to do right now is contact your senators, let them know about both pieces of legislation, and specifically the Pro-IP Act, and then, you know, share music, goddammit, share information. Just because there is the potential for this behavior to become illegal doesn't mean it's illegal right now, and the more people who participate in a quote-unquote illegal behavior, the more likely it is that eventually the government recognizes it has an unjust law on its hands. We saw that kind of happen with the creation of low power FM.
Right.
If it wasn't for, you know, stations like Freak Radio, the FCC wouldn't have taken the issue as seriously as they did. And, you know, we know there are still problems with that, and that's why stations like yours and others are still engaged in electronic civil disobedience, because the law's not perfect yet. But that's the same kind of tactic, you know. Contact your representatives or senators if you can. Never hurts. Walk the fucking walk, you know. Actually go out there and participate in this behavior and encourage it in order to build up the base of people who this law would affect.
Yeah, you could always head out to the G8 summit as well.
Yeah.
Shut it down.
You can do that.
The last,
For Raytheon's pain ray.
Oh, right.
They've now got it. They now actually have it ready, and they're test deploying it in Iraq, and they're preparing to sell it on the open market to law enforcement authorities around the world. So tinfoil hats are no longer, you know, just the realm of conspiracy theorists. They may actually be protest fashion.
All right.
But, yeah, you know, watch the G8 summit. It's going to start happening, like I said, next month. I'm trying to look up some information on it right now.
Good, because I have no internet right now.
Yeah, I still do, but it's Comcast, so it's you know, like slow as hell.
Are you Comcasting?
Ouch. Just go to the website. I posted a great post.
DIYmedia.net is John's website.
It's I can't use email. Comcast has screwed up my ability to use email because they think I'm a spammer, even though I'm not.
What?
Anyway.
Wow.
The G8, it's a long story, and we can go into it some other day.
All right.
The G8 summit is taking place in Tokyo, and it's happening July 7th through the 9th. So that's like 3 weeks from now, pretty much. Yeah. Three weeks from now.
We've been speaking with John Anderson, host of DIYmedia.net, media analyst, I would say. Yes, you are a media analyst.
Sure.
And we've been talking about the Pro-IP Act, H.R. 4279, and the ACTA free trade, anti-counterfeiting free trade agreement. Thank you, John, for hanging out with us this morning.
Sure thing.
Stay on the line. Free Radio 101 FM, freakradio.org. It's always good to share. Stay tuned.
If you've got a ball, bounce it to the gang. If there is a new kid, invite him out to hang. If you've got one sandwich, cut that thing in half. If you know a secret joke, tell it and share a laugh. If you've got one drumstick, give one to your friend. Make one beautiful rhythm, share a beat that never ends. Some milk and cookies and sing the sharing song.
Everybody knows.
It's always more fun to share with everyone. It's always more fun to share with everyone. It's always more fun to share with everyone. It's always more fun to share with everyone.
Share a beat now.